There were a number of faith ventures in Ellen White's life, probably more than the normal person would ever have in their lives, but she had a special calling in a ministry, and one of those faith ventures was establishing a college in Australia. Early in 1891, the General Conference indicated that they wanted Ellen White to go to Australia. Now, there's some supposition and some truth to the reasons that they wanted her to go to Australia. Sometimes when her insights and revelation cut across leaders or pastors in the church, it wasn't comfortable, and the conflict was difficult. So there are some that say, well, they wanted to send her to Australia to get her off of the North American scene. And there may be some truth to that, although I think there's more to it than that, too. The mission board truly did want her influence to be felt in sort of the fledgling Adventist community in the country of Australia. And they knew that if they could get her there, there would be positive results. And the fact is, there were. When Ellen White went to Australia, she ultimately decided to go. She prayed about it. And I have made a whole sermon out of this, so I'll compress it into 2 minutes. What happens when you pray and there just don't seem to be any answers? You ever have that happen? I have. Sure have. And she prayed about this. Lord, what should I do? You know, they want me to go. I don't have any burden to go. I have a lot of work to do here. I still have a lot of writing and things I want to conclude and very important ministry and mission here. And finally, Willie came up again, Willie, alongside her and said, Mom, if you'll go to Australia, if you decide to go, I'll go with you. And he did, along with two or three other Adventists from North America. And finally, she decided to go. When she went to Australia, there were somewhere, and I don't know that the records are replete, but there were somewhere between 500 and 1,000 Adventists in the whole country of Australia. Now, Australia is a huge country. I never thought that I would have the opportunity to go to Australia, but a few years ago, I guess it's maybe 10 years ago now, there was an Adventist tour group going there, and they asked me if I'd like to be the attending pastor, and I said, sign me up, I'm ready to go. Unfortunately, my wife, who was supposed to go, got pancreatitis the day before we were supposed to leave. We had to make a split-minute decision, and she said, you go ahead, and I'll be okay. And so I went and enjoyed it without her, but didn't enjoy it as much as if she had been there with me. But Australia is a huge country. To travel between Melbourne and Sydney, you know, it takes like a day. I guess they got in a big fight as to where the capital should be located in Australia, and the people in Melbourne thought it should be there, and the people in Sydney thought it should be there. They're two of the major cities there. So they compromised, and they created a space for their capital right between the two cities, called Canberra or something like that, Canberra, and it's one of the most logically laid out cities you've ever seen, because it was planned from the grassroots as to be the capital and the streets and everything. Quite interesting. But a few years before James and Ellen White, or before Ellen White, he was gone, before Ellen White went to Australia, there had been some evangelizing done there, and also in New Zealand. And so there were a handful, as it were, Adventists. Shortly after Ellen White got there, she learned that they should have a college there, or she came to the conclusion that they should have a college there. And she began promoting for that, as some of the leaders there before her had. And some of the people thought that she was crazy. Australia was in economic depression. It was economically depressed. The wage earning potential of people was terrible. It was a 6-day a week work week, when people became Adventists, most of them lost their jobs, and so those who could have been income producing, many of those were not. The circumstances were the most untoward for developing a school, which is always a big financial commitment, but Ellen White persisted. She would get up in chapel. They started a Bible college in Melbourne. They rented some buildings and did a Bible training course to train Bible workers. And she would frequently come to the Bible college and speak to the students and the faculty. And one time she was speaking to the faculty and the students, and it was as if she almost had a otherworldly kind of experience. She waxed eloquent and became very animated about Australia being a hub for missions. This is when Australia was a mission, but being a hub from which missionaries would go out to the whole world. And some of the people were scratching their heads and saying, "We can barely support ourselves. What are you talking about?" But it was because she was a visionary under the action of the Holy Spirit that ultimately they began to look for a site for a school. They developed a search committee in 1892, and that committee sought inexpensive property where they could build a more model school. James and Ellen were both, when he was alive and then after he passed away, were disappointed in what Battle Creek had become. The college had sold off a lot of the land around it. They couldn't do the work-study program that they had hoped to do there. They were gone for some time to California, and they sold off some of the land, and she was very disappointed when they returned. And Ellen White's vision for school is that work and study would go hand in hand, and there would be physical and mental and spiritual that would join forces and bring a stronger education than just the educational would ever do. And so when she got to Australia, she began to formulate this vision again, and God impressed her, and they began to look for a place that was away from the cities, that would have plenty of room for farming and agriculture and practical training, and this search committee was formed, and they couldn't find anything. They were hoping that there would be some benevolent person that would get on board and buy into their vision and mission for training young people in practical, spiritual, consistent ways, nothing came up. They found property, but it was way too expensive, hundreds of dollars per acre. Finally, someone came across what was called the Brettville Estate. It consisted of 1,500 acres, and it was on the market for $4,500. That's unbelievable in today's terms. And but it was located away from cities. It was like, I think, 75 miles north of Sydney, and in a country setting near Kurrumbong. And but the soil was sandy and sort of light and colorless and considered not to be good for agriculture, and this was a concern. So they put this search committee together. Members of the committee had gone out to the site, but it was finally time for them to decide, are we or are we not going to buy the Brettville Estate? And they set a date for the committee, Wednesday, May 23, 1894, to do the final survey of the property and to come to a conclusion as to whether they would buy it. Ellen White, who was not on the original search committee, her son Willie was invited to join the search committee because they wanted as much input, as broad a based input as they could have before they made this important decision. And so Ellen White rode the train from Melbourne to Dora Creek, where the train line ended. And then they would take boats up a stream to get to the Brettville Estate. And she rode the train with Elder and Mrs. George, or Elder and Mrs. G.B. Starr. And as she was riding the train, and Willie made an interesting comment, He said, it's interesting that we're looking to invest in property upon which to build a school, and we can barely afford the train fare to get there, which was true. She related to the stars something that she had already told her family. She said, I had been given a dream, a vision, that we were on a property and looking at the property to discern whether this would be a good place for a school. And we came into a clearing, and there in this clearing was a furrow that was about 9 inches deep and about 6 feet long, a freshly plowed furrow. And as she related this to them, she said there were others on the search committee, and there were a couple of men from Iowa who were used to the deep, dark, rich soil of Iowa. They were farmers. And they were standing by this furrow, and they said, this is not good land. It won't grow the things that you want to grow. It won't grow fruit and vegetables, and it won't be a place that would be good for a school. And then it was revealed to Ellen White in this dream, as she was telling this to the stars, that she said, someone who has frequently appeared to me in the past told me that false testimony has been born here today. And her angel, who frequently accompanied her in vision, told her, and this is so amazing to me, the angel started telling her about the strata of the soil and what it would take to make this land productive, giving her a lesson in, what is that, agriculture? Horticulture, yes. And she said, as the angel explained it to me, if the soil was worked properly, it would bring a harvest in the wilderness. Let me see if that's the exact phrase. There was a phrase that she had coined for this. God can furnish a table in the wilderness. God can furnish a table in the wilderness. And so they arrived, and they went up Dora Creek and got to the property, and Ellen White, who was then 66, I believe, was not in particularly great health. A number of the people who were on the search committee took shovels, and they went off to explore various portions of this land, and she sat down. And after she had sat for a couple of hours, she indicated to someone that was nearby that she'd like to take a little walk, and so this person helped her, and they walked through some of the eucalyptus trees and some of the gum trees and came to a clearing. And in the clearing, what was there? A furrow, 6 feet long, about 9 inches deep, freshly plowed. Someone asked, how did this furrow get here? There's no hoof prints, there's no plow. It's just a freshly cut furrow. Nobody knew. As they were standing and looking at this furrow, two men emerged from the forested areas, one at one end of this furrow and the other at the other end. They looked at the soil and they said, this is not good soil. It won't produce the fruit and vegetables that we want for a school here. We should not purchase this land. And the others who had heard what Ellen White had already said, the stars and Willie and a couple others that had heard, were sort of looking at her. Is she going to say anything or not? And she did. She said, an angel has shown me that if this land is properly worked, it will produce a rich table in the wilderness. Well, the next day they had to make a decision. They got together early in the morning, they had a prayer session, and as they were praying, one of the members of the search committee, a Mr. McCullough, was very ill. He had tuberculosis. And Ellen White prayed diligently, Lord, reveal your will to us. And she prayed for Mr. McCullough. And Mr. McCullough was healed in that prayer session. In fact, somebody saw him in Sydney 40 years later, and he was still healthy. He was a young man then who was destined to die. And they took that as a sign that God was in this and that he wanted them to do this. And so the committee ultimately voted to go ahead and purchase this property. Well, then they had to come up with the money. They didn't have $4,500, which seems not to be a huge amount of money today, but it was a huge amount then. Ellen White donated some. They found some donors. They found somebody to loan them some money. And then the soil experts came in. People from horticulture and whatever else, geography and geology and so forth, came in and said, you know, this really isn't good land. And so they sent their report to the General Conference. The General Conference Missions Committee said, cease any further payments. You can, as far as we're concerned, you should discard any down payment that you had made on this property. We should not purchase this property. So, A.G. Daniels and James and Willie White were the designated two men who were chosen by the General Conference Mission Board to go in and tell Ellen White that they were going to cease paying on this property. Well, by this time, she was totally convinced that this was God, that God was in it, that it was his plan, and that they should move forward with this property. And so I can imagine A.G. Daniels and Willie going in to Mom and saying, well, we hate to say this, and we hate to tell you this, but the missions board has told us to call off the purchase of the Corenbaugh property. And Ellen White, I would believe, measured her words when she responded to them. But she said, is there no God in Israel that we have gone to the gods of Ekron for advice? You can hear her saying that, can't you? She said it with no uncertainty. And she stuck with her guns. She reminded her son and A.G. Daniels of the healing of Mr. McCulloch. She reminded them of the furrow. She reminded them of the angel's message that there will be a rich table spread in the wilderness. And she stuck with her guns. And even though it took time, eventually the General Conference Mission Board reversed themselves again and said, okay, go ahead with the purchase of the property. And they did. And there was one miracle after another. It took hard work, and by the time the first buildings were erected, there were 4 faculty members when school was ready to open and 10 students. But once it opened, the student base began to expand, and soon they had 60 students, and then it grew exponentially. Australasian Mission College, which it was initially called, has been the training ground for many, many young people who have gone out all over the world fulfilling the vision that Ellen White had about the scope of what would happen there. I want to read you something sort of in conclusion to this little story presentation. Well, let me read you this first, and then I'll read what I was thinking initially to read you. When the mission board called things off, Ellen White said, in this darkest hour of the establishment of the Avondale School, when the outlook seemed most discouraging, I was sitting in the hotel in Corenbaugh. That's the small town that's close to where the school is, then used by our people, completely wearied out by the complaints made regarding the land. My heart was sick and sore, but suddenly a great peace came upon me. Angels seemed to be in the room, and then the words were spoken, "Look ye," and I saw flourishing cultivated land bearing its treasure of fruit and root crops. Many resources were spread out before me, and wherever my eye was directed, I saw prosperity. I saw the school filled with promising students. All seemed to be helped by the inspiration of well-organized efforts to stand and work upon a high platform. There was so large a number of pleasant faces that I could not fail to understand that the light of the Lord's countenance was lifted upon them. A great light and peace came upon me. I was so blessed that I praised the Lord aloud, saying, "His word is fulfilled. God will spread a table in the wilderness." And so it was. I had the privilege of worshiping in the Adventist Church at Avondale College about 10 years ago. It was a wonderful blessing, and God is still using and blessing that school to train young people for His service. I'm still not to the one that I want to read you. I may have to, okay, here we go. I'll have to tell you because I can't find it. Oh, here it is. There was a terrible drought in Australia after the school had been established. And Ellen White wrote, I don't have anything to complain of. She said, "We saw the great need for a school. 3 years ago, we returned to America." So this was written in 1903. "Others were sent to Australia to take our places. The work has continued to grow. Prosperity has attended every effort. I wish you could read the letters that come to us. Doubtless you have heard of the dreadful drought that has caused famine in so many places in Australia. During the past 2 years, hundreds of thousands of sheep and cattle and horses have perished. In all the colonies, and especially in Queensland, the suffering and the financial loss have been great. But the spot that was chosen for our training school has had sufficient rainfall for good pasture land and bountiful crops. In fact, in legislative assemblies and in the newspapers of the great cities, it has been specified as the only green spot in all New South Wales." Isn't that remarkable how the Lord blessed? So, another story of tenacity, vision, and ultimate victory. And we see that repeated time and time again. It's time to conclude. I don't know if you want to, but if there are a few questions that you would like to pose based on anything that I've shared with you, or questions that you might have, we can take maybe 5 or 10 minutes if you have any questions. If you don't, we will be dismissed. Yes, Randy.
About Ellen White being chosen to be the prophetess, you know, do you have anything extra to say about William Boyer or Hazen Foss experience?
I've studied a little bit about this. William Foy primarily ministered prior to the 1844 disappointment. And it seems that he was faithful in trying to execute the duties that God had asked him to do. The scope of his work was limited, but Hazen Foss definitely was called to take the role that Ellen White ultimately took, and he refused to do his duty. And after he had refused and realized that God's presence had left him, he went to hear Ellen White, and he confessed to her afterwards, "I was given that message, and I refused to give it, and now the Lord's Spirit has left me." One of them was a mulatto, and the other was a black gentleman. So Foy was faithful, but Foss just failed to do what God had asked him to do. It's interesting. Doesn't God take chances? I mean, he chooses people from minorities. He chose a woman. And not that I'm saying people from minorities can't do great work, because they absolutely do and can, but God takes chances when he chooses people, and he doesn't worry about some of the things that would typically worry us. I can't go much deeper than that, because I haven't studied that recently, but I know that Foy was faithful, and I think he died in 1844, and Ellen White did have some interaction with him, and Foss refused to give the messages, and then I believe that one time after he had refused several times, he tried to give the message and he couldn't. It was blocked from him after he had continued to refuse to be faithful to the calling. Any other questions? Yes.
You had said earlier that Ellen White started observing the Sabbath after she got married. Is there a story behind that? Exactly when did she start?
Well, I think she got married in August of 1846, and it was like September or October that they started observing Sabbath. So prior to their marriage, they had been studying the Sabbath question. You know, the whole doctrinal development of the Adventist Church is quite an interesting and unique study in and of itself. There's a whole thing about Ellen White being blocked from commenting on doctrinal studies, and then after the decision had been made confirming those things. Well, interestingly, Ellen White was on the wrong side of the fence when it came to the time to observe the Sabbath for a long time. There were those that felt even to even meant sundown to sundown, and there were others that felt it should just be an arbitrary time, 6 o'clock in the evening. Ellen White fell into that second camp for quite a while, and it took her a while to be convinced that even to even meant sundown to sundown. I don't know that there's a huge story behind them beginning to. I know that Rachel Oakes Preston was a Seventh-day Baptist, and I think she's the one who helped introduce the Sabbath to the Advent believers. And as they studied, they came under conviction this was another doctrinal truth that God wanted them to practice and become part of their practical religious experience. And isn't the Sabbath a blessing, you know? So any other questions? Okay, you've been so faithful. Let's stand together. Pastor, do you want to dismiss the group?
Sure.
I just want to thank you. I want to thank the Hillcrest Church for inviting me to come here. I thank the Petches for their kind hospitality, and every one of you that I've met, it's just been a real delight, and I've reconnected with some people that haven't seen for years and years, and that's been wonderful.
Thank you, Pastor Charles. We sure enjoyed
having
you here.
Thank you so much.
Let us pray. Almighty and everlasting Father, thank you for the messages that we've heard today. Thank you for the ministry of Pastor White. Continue to strengthen him and bless him as he shares these special messages with other congregations anxious to hear more about our early pioneers. Father, what a blessed Sabbath day we've had. Thank you for giving us your love, your light, and your presence. As we leave now, Lord, go with us. Strengthen us, preserve us, bring us back again the following Sabbath. And we commit our ways into your hands. For Christ's sake, I pray. Amen. God bless you all. Thank you.
Could I just say,